All right, so it's November 21st, right?
Yes.
The 20th of attachment. Something like that. How are you? So, you know, what we try to do is just really go through Chumash and push up shot from really understanding how Chazal looked at the world. And as we saw sometimes, it's really very different than the picture we have. Sometimes it's hard. They saw the word chesed. We're accustomed to certainly a negative view of the world. That's so hard. And that's our own view of the world that we don't do. But it paints, if you don't accept that, then you have a trouble with chazal all over Chumash. It's an amazing thing. We've talked in depth about it. So the couple of ideas I was looking through my notes on this parsha that I thought would be worth talking about, a little bit far-ranging, they're not necessarily on the same point. Just to begin, sometimes that's hard to know what a brach is. You know, everything's a brach, and we have certain ideas in mind. So it's an amazing chazal, it's a medrash. It says, Kadosh Baruch Hu says that, this is Parshas Chayesor. I usually do the Parsha before, because by that time I usually have gone through the Parsha. But Chayesor is Shem, Kadosh Baruch Hu says about Abraham Avinu, he was old, he's bubbly. Yem Hashem Berach HaSavram Bakol. Right? He's blessed with everything. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what does that picture in your mind? Everything. He was wealth. He was internationally famous. I don't know where he got this. I once, many decades ago, saw Rabbi Victor Miller quoted some ancient historian, maybe from the Greeks, that Abraham Avinu taught mathematics at a Cairo university, whatever that means. Mm-hmm. It certainly wouldn't be, I'm sure he was brilliant to decide about things. So whether it's true or not, I have no idea, but it certainly was well known. According to Ramban, he was a national figure. The fact they refer to him as Adoni when Ephron sold him the kever, he was a well known figure. Took everything. So Chazal say, so what does Hashem call? But Kol in Gematri is Bas. So Reus, Bas, daughter, Bas. The word Kol, Bakol. Bakol, how does that work?
I thought it was Ben. Let's see, Ben is 72, whereas. Shem
Berach is Avram Bakol. Now, Bakol, no, it's actually. There's a word that doesn't make sense, right? 52. Ben is 52.
Yeah.
Ah, Bakol, he had a Ben and not a Bas. That's how Rebbeinu learns. Right. Sometimes it's hard to know what a brach is, Shai, you know. So he probably means Rav Meir Darshins that he didn't have a daughter. That was the brach. I understand you don't have a daughter. Who would talk that's a bracha? Rav Meir says, because if he had a daughter, who's he going to marry to? The Kananim, at least, you know, he had family at Rivka from his, so there was a girl who he could marry his son to. He had no one to marry, so either she would become a Novid of a Zara, or she'd be married to a Novid of a Zara. He says, that was a bracha. Just a notion. Not having a daughter is a bracha. That's an oddity. It's very hard for us to see. He had a son. He had two sons. He had no daughters. That's the bracha. Okay, you say it wasn't the bad thing. The idea that you're calling it a bracha. You know, we expect certain things with a bracha. It's from Meir's sheet in the gun. And I thought it's worthwhile because so often in life you don't know if you know what's good and what's bad. So you know that's a little bit of a change. All right, Heber. So, you know, I once thought we started discussions of Chesed, and I think even last week we mentioned, you know, Avraham Avinu, what was remarkable about him was he didn't just do Chesed, he ran to do Chesed. You know, he's the way the Ramban paints the picture, so here's a wealthy man living with, according to Chazal, 318 servants. So he took 318 soldiers with him, so you have to assume when he went to wars, he had people around him to take care of him, right? To service him. So when the three malachim show up in his house, what does he do? He runs himself to prepare the food. Just that notion. So most of us consider chisus hakavod, right? Right? We were thinking, I'm sending my servants to take care of you. That's not how we act, right? That was Avraham Avinu. He goes, he's running to do chesed. So, and we spend time in that. So just that feeling, you know. I was once actually in a wealthy man's house. And someone came to the door to collect. He flew off the chair to go and give money. I was very impressed. He flew off the chair to go. I was very amazed. But what's really interesting about the parasha is, so where does Avraham Avinu show his greatest persistence and interest in doing chesed? Well, no, true, but there's even a greater example of chesed.
For Sarah now.
What?
For Sarah to bury Sarah?
No, that's at the end. But in the parish, there's a very poignant story.
You said you were in Chai Sarah already.
What? No, I started with Chai Sarah. Yeah, I jump around. Look, I can't be able to one time. It'll be impossible for me. And it probably doesn't register by most of us as chesed.
When the angels came.
That's true. We've talked about that. He ran himself to do it. But there's really another very dramatic story.
Well, with Chagav and Yishmael.
What? That's true. All these are true. All these are extraordinary examples of chesed. But there's a story. Like, see, I'm right. It doesn't register as chesed. Otherwise, you guys would have nabbed it already, right? He stands up, tries to save Stone. What is that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I once asked a very chush of a man, someone who was sick, to daven for that person. And the person said to me, but I can only do it once. You know, because most of us, we say daven, we say the name, we don't put it in. I understood. When he davens to somebody, he puts his heart into it. And he just he wasn't able to do it more than once, he said to me. I thought it was a very interesting answer. When we say Avraham Avinu daven for Lot, it doesn't just mean he could up, mumbled a couple of words, like the time it takes us to finish Shmoneh Esrei, and moves on. The Chazal says, it was morning till night. And the Malachim was waiting for Davin. He put his heart into it, right? So here's probably the most dramatic example of Chesed in the Parsha. He's Davin morning till night, and who's he said he was Davin for? That part we miss. We talk about Chesed, we all have a picture of Chesed, but most of us has a picture of Chesed of a nice person who shows up in the door, and he acts graciously, and acts nicely. That's not the picture you get from the parsha. You're talking about, who is the prototype of rishis in the world? It's Dom. I mean, the example, Midas Dom, right? Although, Ramban says there were actually countries that did far worse, and it was only because of the quality of the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael that prevented them such an issue. Had they behaved that way, and what was the behavior? They had such a wealthy and beautiful, lush land that they didn't want to share it. They were afraid they would be inundated with immigrants, really, right? That was the story. Rav Yerucham made a point. He lived around the time of the Second World War. He made a point. He says, that one that immigrants and the Jewish people were being persecuted. He talks about Rav Yerucham. He makes that comparison. But just the idea that here's the man, the great tzaddik, and what would most of us say about Stone? What would the reaction of most of us be? It was so far away from what it was, Avraham Avinu. It's a very good picture.
But Avraham's, where he starts it is, he starts with, I think, with 50, and then, right, he starts with a certain number. So he's saying, he's doing chesed for, let's say, a certain, there's got to be, he's believing that there's got to be some people who are worth redeeming.
Well, no. But he wasn't just asking for 50. He was asking if the 50 tzaddik and the whole city, should be saved.
Yeah, I know. Right, I'm saying if everyone should be saved.
Right.
But then he gets down and he stops at 10, right? He stops and he doesn't go beyond 10. So, why didn't he go, let's say, even for one person? Forget that.
So Rashi asked the question. Rashi asked the question, right? And he answers the question, your question. He says, because 9 and 1 he already saw, because when he asked for 40, for 45, he understood 9 and 1 would eat his town, would save everybody, she says. And so he already had asked 9 and 1, it doesn't work, there wasn't enough to save. And 8, he saw it doesn't work from Noah. Because at the time of Noah, when you add up all the people who were saved, there was 8 people. And they couldn't save anybody else. So apparently the schus of 8 is not enough to save a town. That's what Rashi says in this passage.
Now I'm asking, even the schus of 1 is not enough to save a town?
That's what it seems like. You can be a tzaddik, but you save yourself, but it's not enough. That's how Rashi learns why he didn't do that. I had a kasha actually for many years, 2 kashas in that Rashi. One question was, okay, it didn't work there. Maybe it'll work this time. And I don't have an answer to that, Rashi. But being that as it may, but certainly he put all those kaiches into it. Not only that, Rashi says he went with three things. He went with tefillah, he went with, he was going to talk hardly, and he was ready to go to war with the Kaddish Baruch, whatever that means. He was talking tough, you know. He put all those kaiches into it. That's I was, you know, I was once in the Catskills as a Bachman driving my father. I was probably a teenager, base manners. I was driving with my father in the Catskills. And, you know, those days, Catskills were much more today. It was before all the, you know, when I just rolled the drop of a hat. So I was still in the heyday of the front people going to the Catskills. And we passed by a hitchhiker. Yeah, he looks like a hippie. You know, long hair. You know, looked like a bum. So my father, see my father slowing down to pick him up. You know, I said to my father, who's a promoter, I say, Dad, how can I pick this guy up? He looks like a bum. He says, how do you know what he's thinking, who he is? How do you know? You don't know. You didn't talk to him. You don't know what he's thinking. You know, you can't tell from looking at him. That was really still about Kamusser. But, you know, but Avraham Avinu said, Avraham, he can. Okay, he still needs a lift. So, if you think about it, it's not just that you're helping a Russia. You're not supposed to help a Russia. But to help a Russia give the opportunity to live in the world, look, the reality is we're all in this together. Life is tough. People suffer. Life is a very challenging experience. And we're all in it together. And the idea of Chesed is not that you're helping a Russia. You're not supposed to help a real Russian. But people get into trouble and they need help. And that's our job, because we're all in this thing together. That's really the outlook, I think, that you see from Avraham Avinu. It's really not the way we operate. And I'm not talking about some theoretical kind of behavior. You know, people are very hard-nosed about right and wrong. You know, he wouldn't let them walk into the house, because if they were over the Avodah Zarah without washing their hands, you know, keep your bearing. On the other hand, hey, someone's in trouble, you're not helping. That's really such a fundamental idea that Avraham Avinu personified. And that's why the next sign of the Keter for someone like Avinu was like an unreal challenge. An unreal challenge. You take the person who personifies Chesed, talk about Chesed, and then Yeshua Shach, the son, it's hard to imagine anything more cruel. Right? That's like, I mean, most of us in life, even when we suffer, we question God. And this wasn't where you might say, oh, an accident happened. God's talking to you and telling you to shut yourself. What kind of a God is that? What kind of a Kaddish Baruch Hu is that? What kind of a God is that, right? So I wanted to learn that Rashi with you, actually, because after, you know, you can learn a Rashi 100 times, 150 times, then all of a sudden you say, hey, I don't understand it after all the years. I want to actually spend a couple minutes and read that Rashi inside and ask your opinion. What? No. Yeah, actually, it's good. You want it? Let's learn inside. We usually don't read inside. I don't translate it, but because for the first time in who knows how many years, I looked at the Rashi and says, I don't get it. Right? You know, and actually happens on a pretty regular basis, but it's a different discussion. Yeah, here it is. It's Perek Chavbeis. Perek Chavbeis, Pasuk Gubbeis. Well, if Shai's got some commotion. You look up with me. Shai's got to look up with me, and you guys can commotion. And I'll read it, and I just want to ask you how you understand the Rashi. I'm sure it's a Rashi I'm sure you've all heard before. It's Perek Chavbeis in Parshas Vayera, and it's Pasuk Yud Beis. And Kaddish Baruch Hu comes, and afterwards, right after he's about to shecht his son, Hashem says, "No, don't. I'll teach you Yadcha Elanar. You want someone want to say? You want to read the pasuk? Yeah, you want to just read the pasuk inside, just to set the stage."
Vayom Atish La Yadcha Elanar Va'atas La Me'uma Ki Ata Yedati Ki Yirei Elokim Ata Ve'lo Chasachta Espin Pasuk Chachamim Ani.
Let's translate.
Hashem says, don't take your hand to the boy and don't hurt him.
He's about to shech him. Don't do it.
Don't give him a mum, a damage.
Don't do anything.
Because you know that...
Because now I know...
Yeah, that you're Elokim, that you've got your people. and was chassak.
You didn't hold back, I assume it means, right?
Yeah,
you didn't hold back.
Your child, your one and only, your most precious child.
Okay. So we know the story, a very emotional moment. Kiyatu dati, let's see the Rashi there. I'm a Rabbi Abba, it's a Medrash. I'm a Rabbi Abba. And you want to say it? You want to say it? And then we'll, again, we'll discuss it. So we'll talk it out. I'm a Rabbi Abba. Rabbi Abba says.
Amar Avram.
Go slow, interesting.
Amar Avram.
Avram Avinu says to test God. I will explain my. The literally translation means my discussion. It means, hey, I got a problem. Avram Avinu says, let's talk this through. I've got a problem, right?
Esmal Amarta, they keep Yitzhak, Yikar, the Chazara.
First you say to me, you're going to have a son, Yitzhak, and he's going to be propagate your name through Yitzhak. Mm-hmm. Okay?
The Chazarta B'Amarta, Kachna Esbincha, Achshav.
And then you tell me, take him and Shachtim. Okay, first he's going to be the father of my progeny. Then you say, now Shachtim, he's not married, he's no kids. Mm-hmm. Okay, so where does that go? And now...
Achshav, now, Atal Merli, Al Tishlach Yachal Anah.
Now you say, don't. Okay, so from any perspective, that's confusion, right? Mm-hmm. And we told my God, he's going to be a child. No, Shechtim, no, get him back. Like, so what's the time? The time is, help me out. I don't know what's going on here, right? That's why I saw always the pshat in this Rashi, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Right. All right.
Amalo Kadosh Baruch Hu, Lo Achal Brisi.
I will not profane my covenant. In other words, the agreement I said that your zera, your progeny will come from him. I'm gonna keep my word.
Umotzei Sfasai.
Lo Eshaneh.
Lo Eshaneh.
And what I said will not be changed. It'll be completely honest.
Kishemarti Lecha Kach.
When I told you, take your son. I'm not going to change what it said. I said, take him. I didn't say shecht him. I said, take him. I said, bring him up to an olah. It doesn't say shecht him. Okay, so we have a lawyer here in the house. Okay? Right? So he says, I didn't take shecht him. What do you want from me? Okay. So I understand. So I know this is cool. I've seen heard this Rashi so many times, quoted by everyone. So Pshat and Rashi. Okay? You hear my kash already?
No.
Hear my kash? So tell me Pshat and Rashi. So Avram Avinu comes before God. He says, first time he said to me, he's going to be my kids through him. Then tell me Pshat. Then you tell him, keep him alive. God says, what's the problem? No problem. I understand. I didn't change anything. I'm going to keep my word. He's going to be all your children. I never said shechtim. I said take him up. Take him up to Nola. Oh, now take him down. I kept my word.
What does that mean? But it says va'aleu sham la'ola.
I didn't say shechtim. God says over me, you didn't learn pshat. You didn't learn pshat. You didn't spend enough years in yeshiva. You don't learn pshat. Good.
What I meant was just
take him up. Take him up for an ola.
Then it wouldn't be
an Isaiah. What?
Then it wouldn't be an Isaiah.
Right. Okay. Good. So tell me. So explain to me the dialogue here. What's the diet? So ordinarily, everyone says, "Oh, God keeps His word," because he's just saying. Again, that's what I meant. The lawyers says that you weren't careful enough with the connotation of the word. You interpreted it literally, and that's not how it was supposed to be interpreted. You got it wrong. Okay, everybody's happy. Give me a break. If you were Avraham Avinu, what's your real claim here? What's your challenge? Because you're worried about whether God's keeping His word or not. It's confounding. The back and forth. What are you doing here? Right? There's no consistency in my life's experience, right? The challenge is not because I'm worried if God's telling me the truth or not. At least I didn't understand that to be the kash. Avraham Avinu is saying, I go here, I think this. Then whether or not you know I was being misled. What kind of a life is that? So apparently that wasn't the question, right? Apparently it wasn't the question. After all is said and God says, yeah, I kept the word, but I was fooled, right? So you played, it would be called legal games, right? You played legal games with me. But the bottom line is, look at Avraham Avinu. From his perspective, he's like a yo-yo. That he doesn't complain about. Right? He doesn't complain about that. So his complaint is never the fact that we're all yo-yos on a string. That's not his complaint, because otherwise God doesn't answer anything. God doesn't say, yeah, I fooled you. He doesn't say that, right? He doesn't say that. Because his brother was saying to him, understand, I'm consistent with what I said. What I said is true. You have to understand it. You didn't understand it. But the fact that you went back and forth and thought, who knows what? That God doesn't answer on that question. That's life. For the first time, I realized after many years that Avraham Avinu's complaint, which sounds like, hey, you know, sounds like the way I would limp shot, it sounds like Avraham Avinu is saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's no consistency. Avraham says there is. You just have to see it. And the fact that you live a life and think it's all inconsistent, that's your shortcoming, not mine. It's almost like the measures that I quoted several weeks ago, where Avraham Avinu, where Yaakov Avinu, when Shimon is being brought, when is they come to take Binyamin down to Yosef, thinking he's going to be captured. He says, "Lama hari Yosef, why'd you do bad to me?" Thinking he's going to lose another son. And the Medrash says, well, in his whole life, those are the only foolish words he ever said. Should have understood. I'm making your son a king, and you're busy. You know, so if you really would understand, so back and forth, you have a betachin, things fall into place. That's not, you're going back and forth, you're being wishy-washy, that's your issue, not mine, Kadosh Baruch Hu says. To me, that was, when I realized that really defines life. What?
You take it's a novel approach, but a sort of a much deeper approach to what you just said, is that Hashem was answering him, you think your issue, it's not that, that's not what Avram was asking, what's with all the vicissitudes and why is it that you're changing this thing? That was Avram's question. And what Hashem was responding to him, you think you don't even know the questions, never mind the answers. I'm just going to give you an answer just to show you that you have no way to even comprehend everything that I'm doing. So you can't even understand.
Well, the first part I agree with you. Yeah. I was actually alluding to that. The first part, but the second part is even more than that.
Yeah.
But don't think that what I say is ever untrue.
Exactly.
Don't think ever is true.
I have a master plan.
You just can't figure it out.
Right.
Exactly. That's exactly what I meant. Pshat Rashi. Right. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a fascinating story, because that's really so much of life is like that. Yeah. You go through life, you see things that are seemingly inexplicable. And certainly nothing more than, no one will ever have more in anything more inexplicable than Avraham Avinu's experience. Because problems is that is, you know, that's like I am what I am, and I say the truth, and you may not be able to figure it out, but that's still the fact. And that I think you have to say that's Pshat Rashi. So after all these years, there's another on the line, because I used to say, yeah, Akasha, okay. Hashem says, no, it's okay. There's a deeper issue going on over here. You have me with it? You hear that? I thought that was really, from my perspective, it was really interesting. I didn't. One other thing I noticed, you know, moving on. One other thing I noticed was the interesting in Ramban here that says, you know, we talk about the chor af Hashem. Hashem is anger, right? Which is, you know, hard to listen, because we don't attribute those kind of qualities to God. So just as an aside, the Ramban notes that the concept of anger in God's terms is din, the idea of din. And the debate, God has more than one quality which he judges the world. By strict din, by strict accounting, a person behaves in a certain kind of a way, and the truth, if you're really strict about it, we probably wouldn't make most of us. But that is chesed. And the debate, he says, and Ramban says, if you look at the debate between God and Avraham Avinu during the discussion of stone, HaKadosh Baruch Hu always uses, referred to with Hashem, which is the Midah of Rachman. Avraham Avinu is talking about it, thinks he's talking about Elohim, the Midah of Din. And the debate is, you know, which Midah will be used in these circumstances. I just thought it was an interesting point, because I hadn't seen that before. I had seen it once before, but I didn't remember it years ago.
Just a question on the Havamina. So why is it more difficult to try and attribute the attribute of, it's called anger, to Hashem, than it is all the other attributes, Kel Racham V'chan and Erech HaPayim Rav Chesed?
I'm not sure what you mean. You're saying, hey, why not say there's a concept of anger in God?
It's not a real anger, but the same way it's not real mercy.
You're asking a question, so you want to know, hey, say it's an attribute, but you know, there's the Sefer Torah Dvoris from Moshe Kadavar. It's really a Bal Kabbalah Sefer. I never learned it. I only learned the first page or two once, but I thought it was very fascinating. I said, well, we refer to God with these character traits, you know, Kael, Rachman. that's really, it's an inadequate description. It's God is really a combination of all of these things as one entity. It's hard, but we can't make that connection. So God, from the human perspective, seems to be displaying this or that. So when Ram says that Af Hashem is the Midas Adin, to answer your question, possibly, I'm not sure, what he would mean is that when the display of God's anger is expressed in din. There's nothing more than din, because what he says is the idea that, for instance, that God's going to kill somebody in anger, that wouldn't be right. And therefore, nefesh doesn't exist. So anger in the sense of, hey, it's going to have more. He says even killing anybody who's a tzaddik in stone, for example, would never occur to God. That was never the debate, because that was never on the horizon. Because even under worse circumstances, it would never be more than din. So maybe this is what Ramban means. So it's not that God may express anger at rishis, but it's never a question of an anger that's going to have an action. Otherwise, it means that we use din as opposed to rachamim. It's really just an aside, and it's probably not the most important thing. You know, talking about Stom, just before we talk about Avraham Avinu's chesed for it, there's an interesting Akedah Yitzchak is one of the late Rishonim. He actually, also one of the great Mugarishi Svad, one of the people who expelled from Spain in 1492. He writes that the problem with Sdom wasn't, as Ramban says, wasn't they were the worst Rishonim in the world. It's altogether possible that other countries are worse. But when a whole society creates a law and rules about a certain kind of behavior, that makes it much worse. So yeah, a person doesn't give staka. Look, not everyone's a big ball staka. Okay. A person doesn't staka. But when you put that into law, he says that's beyond the pale. You know, okay, you know, we all do things wrong, but when you make it a philosophy, that's how the real
Chiddush is. Institutionalized.
Institutionalized. Institutionalized by the society, I guess it's a much, much more of an impact. You know, he doesn't really say why. I mean, to me, it always seems logical what he's saying, but it's like the United Nations a little bit. You know, you see, it's an institutionalized racist institution. Okay, so you know, this parsha is the first place in Kol HaTorah Kula you see tefillah, right? Chazal say that Adam Rishon, you know, davened for rain. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't put it, the grass didn't come out till Adam was on the world. It was he davened for and come out, but you don't see in the Torah any tefillah until this parasha. Why is that? That's a bad question. I don't mean why is that, because the circumstances may not have warranted. But the Rav Tzadik says that, and I heard this one from Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Avraham Avinu didn't suddenly think of God and knew anything about God. It was an experience of over the years. Some say three, some say it was 48 when he realized he's a God and created, you know, the Jewish religion is really and everything about it. But it was an experience that grew as he understood God during his years of growth. When he davened for Sdom, he didn't know that you could change what God's going to do through tefillah. And the reason I bring that up is because we take so many things for granted. But it's the idea that I can change fate by davening, that's not a given. That's not a given. It wasn't a given to Avraham Avinu, right? Who says you can do that? Who says you can? Who says that's possible? You know,
it's a very complicated concept in general, right?
Go ahead.
I mean, how does that work? Is that just because something's supposed to happen and then you ask God to change it, does God change it?
So that's a remarkable idea. Yeah. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, we'll have to go into some detail. But that idea that you can change what's going to happen, when Chazal say, there's a famous Chazal,
And everything is destined from Rosh Hashanah, so...
You know, yeah, okay. Absolutely, but I thought that's worth the discussion, right? Because the Chachamim say, the Gemara says, Ein mazel Yisrael. There's no mazel, you know, the word means luck, right, translated. But really refers to the mazolus, the constellations, the stars. In other words, a person's born in a certain circumstance, based on family and circumstances of birth, you know, how long to live, and all this personal success, that's preordained on a level. So the Gemara says, the Ein Mal Shofar, the Jew, that doesn't exist. Meaning that Tosu says, it means tefillah, davening, can change it. That's what Tosu says. So but this idea that you can change what's fated, that's a remarkable idea. So Yiddish is asking for detail, but the reality is, you see in the Gemara all the time, person, the classic case of that is Chizkiyahu HaMelech, right? Chizkiyahu HaMelech was the king Chizkiyahu. He did not want to get married because he knew his son would be a Russian, right? And that would be a terrible thing. So he didn't want to have children. There was a debate between him and Yeshaya Navi. We learned that in the Gemara Brachos, if you remember, about Tess, Yud Gimel. The king was the seat of secular power. The Navi was the seat of spiritual power. And there was a debate who should go visit who. You know, of course, today, you know, we would interpret it as an ego. It wasn't. That's not how Rav Yonis Leibschitz explains. The issue is this. You know, in every society, there's a balance. You work, you learn, right? You know, you're in Torah, you study, you go to shul. There's a balance. Where does the emphasis need? See, right? If the king goes to the Navi, that tilts the balance a little bit on the side of the spiritual. The Navi goes to the king, that tilts a little bit more on the side of the secular. But it's the combination of the two that allows the side to succeed. The debate with Shai Navi and Chizkiyahu was, well, okay, what does society need more right now? That's how Rav Yonis is in the debate. But at a certain point, Chizkiyahu got sick. He got sick, critically sick. Mm-hmm. And then Yeshaya HaNavi went to visit him. He was on his deathbed. So Chizkiyahu, the king, asks the prophet, well, why am I destined to die? He was apparently given up hope. He said, because you didn't follow the halacha. The Torah says you got to get married, have children. Explain to why. It's not for you to decide. These are not issues. Halacha is you have to get married. But the consequences are up to God, not up to you. So he says, but it's too late now. The prophet says to the king, it's too late to die. So he says, not too late. I have a Kabbalah from my father, going back all the way to David HaMelech, that even a person has a sword in his throat, never too late to die. That was the guy he davened. And he was able to save his life. Clearly, the assumption of the Gemara was he would have died otherwise. And of course, there's so many other stories like that. The idea that a person can face an experience and daven and change it. Of course, that effort is very, very demanding. Real davening is very demanding. I saw some recently quoted a Rav. He actually was listening to a tape from Rav in our area, who said, you know, sometimes you have to accept it. Hashem doesn't hear its feelings. I said, that may be true, but that's not most of the time. Most of the time, you know, people don't daven with the kind of intensity that really needs things to get changed. If you actually see, it reaches the point that a person's heart, Chazal say this, that you can actually reach the point, all of a sudden, like a tremendous stone comes off your heart. That's real davening. That means tremendous effort. That kind of tefillah can move a mountain, can really change things. That's Chazal. So Avraham Avinu discovers that here. Where's the first use? I thought it's remarkably ironic that the first use of tefillah, of davening, in all the Torah, is to save stone.
Can we just explore it a little further?
Sure, absolutely.
So what is exactly happening? Person's davening, and then why is Hashem changing what otherwise would have been?
So you say, why is He changing it? Because the world is about us. And we decide our future, nothing else. There's nothing cast in stone. What's amazing, I had a good chaver of mine, we were learning together once, Masechet Skitin, and I was a bachur in Eretz Yisrael, he's a Rosh Yeshiva today, and his uncle disappeared. He had an uncle who was not 100%, it just soon disappeared. So when they went to one of the known Kabbalists, in Yerushalayim. This was, goes in the early 60s. He told me he did this. He went to one of the Kabbalists, and the Kabbalist told him all sorts about his life. He was astonished. And he's a very smart guy. He was astonished. So they asked him, first they started talking about his own life and experiences of life. He said things he could never have known. And then they asked him where he is. He said he drew pictures. He's captured. He's inside a square. He can't get out. But I don't know if this is true or not true. Later he asked one of the Gedolim, Rav Eliyoshi, he said, shouldn't go back because the rabbis can do the same thing, he said. Except you don't know if it's kishuv or magic or through Torah. So he said to him, he said to him, this Kabbalist says, so what will be? He says, I can't tell you because that doesn't depend on this. The circumstances change, custom change, the mitzvahs you do change. Everything, your future is decided by the mitzvahs. So you come to Rosh Hashanah, even Chazal say, even Rosh Hashanah. You come, you have a faith. Tefillah Gadol help. You can actually daven and change your faith, even after Rosh Hashanah. Just as easy as Rosh Hashanah. There's no point in life, and that was the point of Chizkiyahu, there's no point in life that your faith is fixed. No point. No.
So what's happened? Rosh Hashanah, something's fixed, and then
you have a zero, but you can change it. You
for
can
better change or for worse.
It. Yes, absolutely. For worse, I don't know, because you don't seem to. That doesn't seem. I get because the Chazal, but tefillah is special. You know, it's not like it's fixed and just will change by itself. There's a zero. God made a decree, but tefillah helps. That's why davening helps. The Kali Shul says davening. It's not the whole idea of tshuva. The Rambam says, you become a new person. You're not the same person. Avram Avinu got a new name. Avram. It wasn't Avram, he was Abraham. He's a new person. And you can now change who you are. And you can change your fate. And that's that single idea is the most important idea of Yiddishkeit, that you're not fixed in what you are. People, most of the world till that point, I mentioned the daughter of Paro, most of that point was fixed the idea. You are what you are, nothing changes, In pagan times, if you were a serf, a peasant, you were worthless. You were less than an animal. Right? That's why that's why you had the Roman Colosseum, where you could throw people to the animal. What's a person? He's a behemoth. Killing wasn't looked at today, where we have the concept of the Goyim took from us of Judeo-Christian ethic of humanity. That's Judaism. Judaism gave that to the world. The pagan worldview of the human, you're an animal, you're nothing worth anything. That's why you could throw it to people in lime. There was no conscience about throwing a person in lime because he was nothing. He was a serf. You wouldn't throw a Roman senator to the lions, maybe. Because he's a question of a person, he's a Caesar, So that idea that you can actually change your faith through real feeling and nothing's fixed, that's a uniquely Jewish idea that's used in books of the world. And the irony is it's used in the first time to save Rishayim. I thought that was. It's only later that you see Hagar davening for her son Ishmael. It's used in a personal sense. Here it's used in a public sense, not for yourself. And that also is a progression of how you see tefillah. Question?
You have to continue to play it out.
It's a remarkable idea, and that was what Avraham Avinu brought to the world. Again, we live in a world, we take all these for granted. Okay, it's not simple. Live in a world, you've grown up, a certain faith has to be, that's right. You could totally turn it around. That's a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
What it said has no significance.
There's an interesting sephora that's worth noting over here. I know my Rebbe once gave a shmooze on it. So Avraham Avinu is told, don't shaft your son. Don't shaft your son. Okay, after this. So he finds a ram. You just happened to get stuck over there. He knew since it was stuck that it must be a good thing, because if it was the Yetzirah trying to fool him, that to replace his son, it would have been flying right through him, right? It's an old Jewish world, but I think the Mepharshim say that. So he says, Vayikach es ha'ayel, the Pasuk says, he took the ram and he brought him up for an ola, tachzmu, instead of his son. Okay, what does that mean, instead of his son? Remember, all the language of the Torah is very, very precise. Okay, he could have said the Pasuk, and he brought the ram up to be an ayel, to be the ayel is to be the ola, to be the carbon ola is a burnt offering. So he brought the ram, this animal, to be the burnt offering instead of his son, right? So what does he add the word tachzmu instead of his son? We understand instead of his son. His son's not getting killed, bring the ola, right? So let me read the Sfor and tell me what you think. Tamura Smashahaya Belibo, in exchange for what he had in his heart, the Zakis is Beno, he was going to offer his son. Al Derech is along the lines of Dover Emes Bilvavo. There's a halachic concept that you're not mechuyev, but if the classic example is a man who's davening Shemon Esrei, you're negotiating a deal. A man's davening Shemon Esrei. You're a little tough about it, and you're on a deal. Let's say you were going to sell it. He wants to buy something for you, and he offered you 1,000. You're asking 2,000. Okay. Then he offers 1,500. You can't answer 1,500. You would take. But you can't answer him because you're in the middle of Shemon Esrei, right? So he says it's 1,500. So he goes all the way to your 2,000. The end of Shemon Esrei, but I finished Shemon Esrei. If you had more kavanah, you'd probably make a million on it, right? So you finish Shemon Esrei. That's actually how it is most of the time anyways, right? You didn't deal. So the Gemara says that the Amora afterwards says, no. When you said 1,500, I was, in my mind, I was ready to accede to what you said. So I'm going to give it to you 1,500. Dover Emes Vova, because in my heart, that was true. Technically speaking, there's no lawsuit, there's no legal claim, there's no, but the concept of honesty is integrity. Say, if I was prepared to do it, is it right for me not to? Sfuna is making an extraordinary extension. He says, when he brought the carbon, since he had committed in his mind, he was ready to send his sacrifice his son. So he felt as a Christian integrity, but I had made up to give my son. Now I can't give my son. I'm not allowed to anymore. But I'm short on what I had agreed to do. So Chazal say when he offered it, he intended it. He made believe almost in his heart. He acted as though it was his son. So he should feel. This is about personal integrity also. It's not about, hey, you have to do that. But the emotions that, hey, I was prepared to do something. You know, I get stuck. You know, a lucky person has a mind to give $100. And he says, I'll change his mind. I just got my electric bill in the mail. I'm only going to get $50, right? We all know this. But if you're lucky, this is a din. If you made up, you're really going to give $100, you're going to give the $100. There's a real chiyuv. Because staka and hektish is something that you can commit to even in your mind. If it was an intellectual commitment. But it was more than that. It's about, hey, if you are emotionally committed to something and you don't carry it through, there's a question of personal honesty. And if you don't do it, the Torah takes ideas that we're used to and they use in a way that we're not used to. And that's what Torah definitions of honesty are very different than the run-of-the-mill definition of honesty, how we define honesty. So Avraham Avinu, he went and he brought this carbon, said, look, I made a commitment that's deeper than what I'm able to fulfill. I thought that was an important point to you, Chaver. Another point that we touched on, one of our early shiurim, we talked about our karas hatov, right? And we talked about how far it goes. You know, again, we take these stories. Avraham Avinu went to war to save his nephew, Lot. And if you read the bio of Lot, he was never a great tzaddik. And this later history of his life proves that, right? When Avraham Avinu said, go this way or go that way, he chose a different way, we said, because in his heart, he wanted to dissociate from the life of Ben represents. It's like, I know someone who had a Seder, once, many years ago. So I asked him, is he going to increase it? Or he says, no, he doesn't want to get too committed, right? Because the reality is, the more you learn, the more committed you get, the more responsibilities you have. That puts you in a little bit of a pickle, intellectual pickle or an emotional pickle. So he says, Lot wanted to dissociate from Avinu. So he dissociates from Avinu, he goes to a country, Sdom, and he's captured. What was Avraham Avinu's responsibility to save him? He went to war. We take it, all's well as well, so he won, right? He didn't have to win. He didn't know he win. We now look back and say he won, right? What was his responsibility there?
It's like this basic, the policy of the mother.
Why did he go to war? You know, you're not so Caesar, you know, put yourself in, right? Put yourself in risk. Why? What prompted him to that? And now Pidini, you're not allowed to just put yourself in danger. That's a halachic, you know, Shmaitzim Snafshu Seichim is a mitzvah of the Torah. Watch yourself, take care of yourself, right? So what was it, Chaver?
Spell in the forest. So
Vashem means like, I guess he had a deeper understanding of himself, you know, right? His right. How we should help.
Yeah, but I mean, but you know,
right?
Well, there's helping is one thing, like, but picking up a gun and running after four powerful kings, you know, that's that's not just helping, that's real sakanas nefashos, that's putting your life in danger. So, you know, what prompted that? So, very fascinating. The Ramban, says because he, in the final analysis, despite Lot's mistake, poor choices, he was in the pickle he was because of Avram Avinu. Because Avram Avinu forced him to leave, he forced him to separate. He wouldn't have been this. Oh, true, you made a bad choice. You didn't have to go there, you could have gone there. But I was the one who forced it. So I'm responsible. I can't carry responsibility. There's no legal responsibility. No one would claim. Would anyone claim responsible? But the reality is, he wouldn't have been there if not for him. Avraham Avinu, therefore, he's a chray. He's responsible. That's an extraordinary extent.
It's before the Torah, so you could say that they weren't obligated by Torah laws. But I mean, still, would that be a heter to for sakanas nefashos?
That's you're asking a really good question. It sounds like you know,
just because he put him in that situation, so what? You still can't take your life into it.
Here, the language of the Ramban. Let me read the language, and then I translate. Because what Yiddi is asking is question is okay. So let's say you feel responsible. On the other hand, there's a mitzvah to protect your life and the lives of your family and your soldiers. What gives you the legal halachic right to put yourself in danger? So that's a really great question. But the language reminds lo yitochin shetavu lo avro bavur sheyotza b'mitzvahs kono. Avraham Avinu puts his life in danger, and
that's it.
Right? And
that's
what. Okay, but I'm sorry. Avraham, therefore Avraham, he was saved by Avraham. Ki bavur haya b'stom. Vule Avraham odenu yebacharon. Lo yitochin she. First of all, he's saved because he wouldn't have been in danger without Avraham Avinu. He says, "V'gam zeho ya'inyun she'el some Avram nafsho v'kapel lifto bavuro." Avraham Avinu runs after him because he's only there because of Avraham Avinu. So you're asking a halachic question. Hey, he said, "I don't know. I don't know the answer." Apparently, he felt it was mutter, but you're really going to ask him a question. Hey, what? He says, "Hey, you're responsible. Technically, you have to ask a shaila."
But an easy answer is before the Torah, he wasn't obligated to keep the mitzvahs.
Yeah, but you know, they kept all the mitzvahs. But apparently, he felt there's enough of an achrayus. I can only answer by stating the obvious, right? That the fact that he did it indicates that. But the question is a valid question. But the implication for us is that how far do you carry personal responsibility? You're personally responsible for how far? How do you see yourself responsible for something that happens? So here is, his shepherds are crooks. They're fighting with my shepherds. I want you to get out of here. And then you make a choice to put yourself with some of the worst criminals in human history. And then you get captured. Now it's my job to run after you and save your life because you made such poor choices in life. Apparently it is. It's similar. Chazal say that the tree, the Eitz Hadas, was the tree that which they finally took covering from, because that was the tree that they actually ate from. So they felt a sense of some responsibility. And just finally, the experiences of Lot. You know, we're just wrapping up a medley of different things today. Lot in Sodom, when the Malachim come for him, he closes the door when the whole city surrounds him. So Rashi surrounds, says the whole city surrounds. So the first thing, it doesn't mean the whole city surrounds his house. But if they didn't participate, if you didn't stop them, you're responsible, which is generally a Torah shkafa. If there's a serious problem going on and you don't stand up and speak about it, you're achroy. That's a, you're mechuyav to stand up and speak. But they're asking for terrible things, right? And he closes the door because he doesn't want the malachim, who he thinks are people, to hear what they're saying on the outside, because it affects badly on his choices. But the chesed he did for them ultimately is what saves. The chesed he learns from Avraham Avinu is ultimately what saves him. But then he, instead of offering these men out, he offers his daughters to them. And that is inexplicable, right? Here he means he's trying to do the right thing to save his guests. But certain things that are unconscionable, right? Just the idea that he could do that shows a certain laxity, which he pays for terribly with through all history. Lot is remembered as the father of Ammon and Moab. You know, the incestual relationship with his daughters is a result of his lack of integrity, as Chazal say. All of history. And yet, where does Mashiach come from? His descendant, most descendants from Moab, because Rus is from Moab, and Melech HaMashiach comes from that relationship. So, you know, the world is not, you know, the world is much more complicated, it seems. I loved Beryl Wine's quote a little while back, and I read one of his articles in the Israeli press. Says, you know, just because we can't, we predicted things wouldn't happen the way we see it happening, you know. That's not a reason to dismiss what we're seeing in front of our eyes. And that's a big challenge. You know, life doesn't... An example I always use from our shiur when we learned Masechet Megillah is that they knew that the Golas bubble would be 70 years, right? They knew it would be 70 years and come back. And they couldn't figure out when it would end. They knew when they went out, they knew when they're coming back. And of course, that was Ahasuerus' life open. They made a party about it. And here we have all the rules. This can't be, that can't be, that can't be. But, you know, look around, Chevra. It's, you know, the Yerushalayim is being built. We should be Zocha to Mashiach Kekemer, maybe Yomeinu. But it's, you know, open your eyes. It's, ideology only goes so far, Chevra. Open up your eyes. Because Baruch Hu runs the world. And the way it looks is, and the way things come out, is not always the way we predicted or the way we expected. The person who thought they was the black sheep of the family was not accepted. The Mashiach comes from Moav. Atzas Hashem Yisokam. I think let's close it here. All right, a little bit of a.